just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine.
Hello, this is Carrie Sagal, and we're here at another edition of The Library Show, and today with me is Lance Ewers.
Thank you so much for inviting me here to talk today about books. I love it.
And
thank
I see
you.
You're wearing something that kind of indicates what you do in the world. Maybe you can explain that to the people of Sitka if they don't already know.
I am so lucky to be a lieutenant with the police department, and I also volunteer at the fire department, and I'm blessed to live in Sitka, so it's great.
Do you get a chance at the fire department when there's downtime to read while you're at the fire department, or is there no such thing as downtime?
Yeah, no, not at the fire department. I do most of my reading at home, or if I'm on a trip. Like, I love to go on a trip and actually bring a book and read a book while I'm on a trip, but I do read at home, too.
Let's jump right in.
Great.
Tell me about a book that you're excited about right now.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I could tell you about a book that I've been excited about if Mr. George R.R. Martin will write it. Is the
book
last,
number six?
That's right, the last book of the Game of Thrones. I've read every book so far. I can't wait till he brings out and puts out the new last, hopefully, or maybe not. I shouldn't even say last, hopefully, but the last book. I'm waiting for it. I can't wait for it to come out.
So for somebody who's maybe been living under a rock for a long time, maybe you could kind of fill in on the phenomenon of the Game of Thrones.
Well, it is it was introduced to me by my sister-in-law, and I couldn't, after I got a hold of the first book, it was like one of those books that just grab onto you. And actually, it's funny, you know, Becky, my fiance, she didn't like it so much because I was always reading at that point. And then there was a second one and a third one and a fourth one.
And they're pretty hefty books. I read book one.
Right. They are pretty hefty books. Wildly entertaining, relaxing. It's just it was a lovely read. Every one of them just really enjoyed them. And now HBO, Home Box Office, makes a show about them. And they don't follow the storyline exactly, but it's a super entertaining show. And I have seen I haven't seen this season now that's out. I haven't seen this season that's out, but I've watched I think there's four, maybe five seasons out now. And I've watched all the ones that are out.
So for people who aren't familiar with the author, Martin, maybe you can tell a little bit about the world he's created. And that's what I found in reading book one. He does a fantastic job of creating a believable world that I myself would not want to live in.
He does. And it's amazing. There's not too many authors where, like, they will build a character up and he'll be the main character and then he dies. And then you're, like, left. And then another main character and then he dies or she dies. And then I know that's... sounds a little dark, but it's an interesting book about, well, it's the Game of Thrones, right? So it's an interesting book about loyalties and different clans and different tribes, if you will, and different groups of people living in different parts of the world and trying to come together and create allies and be, you know, work your on your foreign policy, if you will, and diplomacy and all while deciding who's going to be the king. And
I'm going to go back to something you said about his willingness to kill off a character.
Right.
In reading book one, there was a character that I really worried about, and I'll maybe get their name wrong, but you can tell me. Arya, is that a
Stark,
character?
Stark, yes.
And who is she? Can you explain to the audience who she is?
Yeah, Arya is just a really awesome character. She would have been the youngest daughter of the Stark family that lived in the north, and I'm sure people who know if they've seen the show or whatnot, but just tragedy after tragedy, having to endure just awful things and just life and being tough and growing up in this tough, hard world. And I'm really fascinated to know what's going to happen with her because we don't know yet. Well, what's going to happen with her? How she?
I'm glad that she's alive in book five.
She
I
is
was
still
worried
alive.
That she might die off in book two.
Right.
And I seem to remember that she might have been about age 12. And in book one, she is on a sort of a journey. While the rest of her family is involved in intrigue, she's on this journey, and she is in danger at any point. So I was worrying about her.
Yes, because, you know, at any point in time, this young girl, you know, that's growing up is always surrounded by danger. And it, and when you see that all these main characters do get killed, you know that it's a possibility. Nobody's safe in the Game of Thrones.
So dare I ask about Tyrion? He was the other character that I found very interesting in book one.
Right. And Tyrion is, I mean, I almost probably, I dare say, everybody's favorite. He is just super real. He is, you know, I guess he could be rude, but he could be polite. He could be friendly. He could be mean.
That's just what I found about him, is that he seemed to be on the fence. There are some truly evil characters in the world, in the Game of Thrones, and then there are some people that seem to be kind of on the good side. And Tyrion seems to be right there in the middle, observing both sides.
Right. And I mean, the author is amazing how he writes, and he could write about these, you know, fictitious characters that lived in a time that didn't ever exist, but we know it was long ago, of course. And
is your sense that it's set in this world, or could it be any world, anywhere?
Well, I guess it would be this world, but it would be during, like, I don't know, like the 1400s or 1200s.
It does have a medieval feeling to it.
Medieval feeling, right, of the Dark Ages and whatnot. But it's so relevant. It's so relevant to 2016, even.
And now, I have to confess that I decided after book one, even though I love the writing and I found the world complete, that it was a little too violent for me, especially there was a lot of violence against women and children. And at some point I thought, no, I don't want to read another paragraph or two about someone being harmed in a really horrible way. But apparently a lot of people have been able to overlook that because the book is so enjoyable to read.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because this is not one that I'd want any of my five kids to read yet. Now, when they get older, I think that, yeah, I would like them to enjoy it the way I've had the pleasure of enjoying it. But you're so right. If violence isn't, you know, something that you, well, I mean, I golly, it sounds terrible because I don't really enjoy violence either. I do enjoy those books, but I could see where it could not be for some people.
Yes.
For certain.
So I don't think we've given too much away, other than it looks like we know that a couple of characters survive in the long term. Are there some other books that you just are keen on right now?
You know, I have my favorites. In fact, there are books I make my children read and make sure that they do, you know the story. And I would say one of my favorite books that I truly believe everybody really would benefit from is A Message to Garcia.
I see that you have it in front of you. It's almost a pamphlet.
It's precisely, exactly. This is a short read. Literally, you might even be able to read this in 20 minutes.
So tell us what it's about. And it's based on a true story, isn't it?
This is a true story. It's right there. It just says it's life-changing classics. This is a classic that was right around the turn of the century. It is a true story about a message that was sent to Garcia. But the underlining character developing traits that big businesses are looking for when they're hiring people. So if you're a young high school student and you're about ready to graduate and be thrown out of the nest and go into the world, then this is the book for you. You want to read this book because somewhere out there, you want to be hireable. You're going to want a job someday to make money, and somebody's going to want to hire you. And they're going to want to hire 500 other people that want the same job that maybe you want. So you want to, you know, put your best foot forward. The Message of Garcia, this is a book for you then.
Tell us more about it. Tell us what it's about.
It was written by Ebert Hubbard, and it was written back in the 1800s during the when the railroad people ruled the you know, at least the Americas, you know, the railroad, what they call them, tycoons.
So the railroads were being built.
Right, exactly. And they're the ones that got a hold of this story and really started putting it out and having their employees read the story. It's super relevant even today, though. So the gist of it is, could you imagine living, and we don't call it the turn of the century anymore, right? So it's the turn of the turn.
Of the previous century.
It's the turn of the previous century, where you don't have cell phones and you don't have radios to talk on. And I mean, you're talking the 1800s or late 1800s, early 1900s. And we need to find the rebel leader of the Cuban people. So the people are revolting. There's a rebel leader. They're at war with Spain, and our president of the United States of America needs to get a message to that rebel leader, and his name is Garcia.
And so how does he do that? Imagine he doesn't just make a telegraph message.
Sure. And like, how do you do that? Well, here's the deal. When you're the president of the United States, you have people to figure that out for you. And that's kind of the point, where if the president of the United States says, I need a message, this is what it's going to say, I'm going to write it, I want you to give this to Garcia. Garcia lives in Cuba, in the jungle, where he's fighting the government, and I want to make allies with Garcia, and I want to make, you know, I want to tell him what I want him to know, and help him, so I need you to pass on this message, and here it is. And I don't care how you're going to get it there, I don't want to know the logistics of how you're going to do it. I just want to know when it's done.
So is it one person who has the responsibility?
That's what's so good about this book. It's basically, this is what I need done, get it done. And so they go to this man named Rowan. Rowan, what a wonderful man he is in our history. And he is the true hero here in this story. Rowan simply says, Roger that. Okay.
And off he goes.
And that's it. He doesn't say, well, how am I going to get there? What am I going to do when I get there? When I get there, first of all, you know, am I going to take a boat? Is somebody going to fly me? When I get there, how am I going to find him? Why do you want me to do this? It's somebody else's job. Why is it my job? No, he just says, okay.
I'll do it.
That's it. And he gets it done. I mean, yeah, okay.
So do you have a good understanding of Cuban politics and history? Because I must confess that I know almost nothing.
I don't have I guess I know a little bit about the history. I know because I am a cigar aficionado. I love Cuban cigars. So it'll really benefit me if we open up trade and we start having more friendlier relationships with Cuba.
Yes. And I think a lot of Cubans have Cuba on their list of places to go.
That would be an interesting place to visit. No question. I know the Canadians, our neighbors next door, they're allowed to go. So they go often, and I have some friends of mine who are from Canada, and they have said that Cuba is a nice place.
And I guess U.S. citizens find roundabout ways.
I know.
Roundabout ways to go to Cuba.
Right. And I actually have family members who found roundabout ways to go to Cuba. So kind of interesting stories, but that's another time.
Well, let's pick a different book.
Okay, great. Well, Message to Garcia, great book. How about we talk about Boyd? Boyd was a fascinating a fighter pilot. Again, this is a true story, who did change the art of war. Boyd is the one who he actually designed the F-16 fighter plane as well as the F-15 fighter plane. He was an Air Force pilot, born and raised in Ohio, actually. Actually, there's an airport in Ohio named after him. And then for those folks that have been in the military and have gone through some sort of like a boot camp, maybe you've heard the word OODA loop. And OODA loop is Boyd. Boyd coined that
phrase. What does that mean?
So OODA loop I could probably Google a definition, let you know exactly what it is. But it's basically the first person that could orient, could react faster than the other person. And then they'll ultimately win that kind of an engagement. So whether that engagement is, you know, because you're in a dogfight, because you're a fighter pilot, or because you're in a street fight and somebody's trying to mug you or something like that, if you're able to orient to the threat and respond and react to that threat faster than your opponent, then you win.
And that's OODA loop.
That's the OODA loop.
beings, throwing caution aside and going for an engagement.
And acting appropriately before your opponent could act and react to you, because we know action is always faster than reaction. So if you could act, then, and you could continually act and continually force that opponent to respond to your actions versus you responding to their actions, then ideally you'd be the victor in that kind of an engagement. So it's a long story about the Air Force and about big government and about how this man, you know, single-handedly kind of took on the Air Force and created these things. It's just, he was brilliant. He's one of those people that we all have heard of in history that their minds simply work differently. Maybe they're a little bit... what is the word I'm looking for where they're eccentric is the word?
Oh, so was he an eccentric person?
He was, yes. Mm-hmm. He was very difficult to get along with. If he either loved you or he hated you, and he grew up in a time where, you know, they were very much upfront in your face to the people that they hated.
I'm seeing the cover shows a man wearing gear for piloting. And I would guess World War II era. Am I off?
A little bit. I think his time frame would have been like the Korean War and the Vietnam War era, and then into prior to the Gulf War.
Oh, so more recent.
Right.
What did you like about the book?
I just really liked the true story behind this man and how brilliant he was and how smart he was. I find that, yeah, it's fascinating, you know, that he was able to do so much stuff in his lifetime. So,
and I'm sensing a theme in the books you've talked about so far, where an examination of cult, of character, of maybe the main person in the book seems to be interesting to you. Am I wrong?
No, I think you might be right there. Yes.
Do you have any other books that you like that might fit in that category of,
you know,
an examination of character?
Maybe not. Well, yeah, I guess you can do it like that, can't you, if you were going to, like, psychoanalyze that. But I have another book that I would really – if I, like, was a millionaire and I could buy everybody one book, and it would absolutely a must-read, it is Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez. Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez is one of those books that it examines – it looks into why some people live and why some people die when they are in life – threatening and survival situations.
So is this book sort of anecdotal, like a chapter will be about a certain situation, a certain person?
It'll be about a certain incident. They probably talk about like 23 true stories, all factual, about survival situations where, like, say a ship sank and there were 7 people in a life raft, but only 3 of them lived. Or a plane crashed in a jungle and in South America and 12 people survived the plane crash, but only one little girl lived. Or about, you know, like a POW, prisoner of war, you know, why some prisoner of wars, prisoners, you know, were able to survive while others weren't able to survive.
What are some of the conclusions the author comes to?
One conclusion that I'll share with you, because I don't want to give the whole book away, but it really blew my mind, because people who know me have kind of described me as like a glass half full versus a glass half empty. And what I learned in that book is it's actually not the optimists that live. It's more of the pessimists that live.
Strangely, I just saw a news article about that today. That,
did you really?
That people that are pessimistic maybe struggle a bit more and think things through and think about their situation. Is that what's happening in this book, or is there a different theory?
It's similar to that, but what they found is a guy who's an optimist and says, "Hey, we're prisoners right now, guys, but come on. You know, turn that frown upside down, you know, smile on your face. We're going to be gone by, we're going to be free by Christmas. War's going to be over.
Oh.
And by Christmas, we'll be home."
And then Christmas comes.
And they're still prisoners. And then they say, "Oh, well, Easter. I'm certain it's going to happen by spring. They're going to get through the winter. Spring will be here and we'll be free." And then it comes and it doesn't happen. And then they say, "Well, by summer, I'm certain now." And then it doesn't happen. See, and a realist or, you know, somebody who's a little less optimistic may just say, "This situation is awful. I'm going to deal with it.
I'm going to try to survive today.
I'm going to deal with it. But whatever happens, hey, it's going to be awful, and we're going to deal with it. It's going to be awful, but we're going to deal with it.
So you might fit in that category of someone who has the right mindset to survive in a dismal situation.
Yes. I find myself, I'll probably be the optimist, but I'm going to try to remember just...
Oh, you're more of an optimist.
I am, unfortunately. So, but I have the... I read the books, and hopefully someday if I ever find myself in a survival situation, I'll remember not to be so optimistic and to just embrace the misery and deal with it.
Now, I sat in in-service training 20-some years ago, and we watched a video, and it did involve concentration camp survivors.
Right.
And the premise of the video was that people that were in the camps that made a plan for what they were going to do after the camp had a better chance at survival. Was there any mention of this in this book, Deep Survival?
Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez. Yes. Absolutely yes. In fact, I read it a long time. It's time for me to reread it, actually. I'm going to enjoy that. But I do recall specifically talking about playing baseball in your head or, what kind of garden you're going to plant, what your garden's going to look like, and just working that out in your head and, dealing with the immense boredom and hunger and, misery by just going to a different place when you could. So interesting. Yes, that's interesting.
So it talks about mental. The book talks about mental survival or mental habits. Does it also address physical or spiritual habits?
I think definitely spiritual. But when we talk about these survival situations, it really didn't have too much to play in your size or your physical abilities as much as your mental abilities and what your belief systems were. Just how you handled that amount of stress and what your breaking point was.
So have you ever been in a situation where things look dicey?
Interesting.
For more than a moment.
That's brilliant. I appreciate that. That's great. I can tell you, one comes up to mind. I guess I've been in a few different really dicey situations in my life. But one that I could share with you is was actually as an Alaska State Trooper prior to my coming to Sitka Police Department and being a police lieutenant here. I used to be an Alaska State Trooper, and I was stationed up in the Mattsu Valley, and I was on a patrol on four-wheelers, actually. I was in one of those souped-up golf carts that,
yes.
It's not a four-wheeler, but it's like a souped-up, you know what I'm talking about? And my partner who I was with was in, and he was on a regular four-wheeler, and we were just patrolling this giant area there just north of Anchorage and out of the Palmer area in Alaska. And we were over an hour into the woods on four-wheelers. And it was wintertime, and we were all dressed warm, and myself and my partner were dressed pretty warm. Just kind of lay out the things. There was ice chunks going down the river. We had crossed the river like six times already. On that seventh time, however, my golf cart went in too deep and shut off.
In the water.
So I stood up on the front of it to try to get a rope to tow it out, to get the winch to tow it out while my partner was going to tow me out with his four-wheeler. And sure enough, slipped and fell right into the water.
You did? Or
I
you
did.
Both?
Oh. No, I did. So I was completely submerged in the river. I kind of floated down with the current, stood back up.
You have that reaction where it was difficult to breathe?
I did, but I had the training already through the police academy here where actually in Sitka we teach people how to survive those kinds of that reflux, that gasp that you have when you're in that water and you suck it in. You have to train yourself not to do that and to know what that's like.
So you're floating downriver?
Soaking wet from head to toe, complete immersion in water. And now I'm in a survival situation. As an Alaska State Trooper out here, I'm over an hour away from the nearest civilization. Since I was already wet, we got the four-wheeler all hooked up, towed out I guess they're called not mules, but they're called, the golf cart looking dealio. And brilliant as the troopers are, they're prepared for things like this. We just busted out our survival kit, inside which were road flares, collected up a bunch of the river wood, made a giant pyramid looking, you know, and started a giant fire. I mean, just a raging big fire along the river bottom there. Stripped down to nothing but my underwear and dried out all the clothes. Stood by the fire while we dried out all the clothes, and that way I could get out without having wet clothes on. So for about 2 hours, we worked on drying off the clothes and keeping warm enough.
You must have been happy to be with other people.
Yeah, well, I was with one other person, but right on.
Yes.
It was just pretty interesting because I thought to myself, if we wouldn't have had these road flares, I mean, how much time, or I would have been by myself, how much time would I have had to get that fire going?
Yes.
And then get out of here, because an hour on a four-wheeler is quite a difference when you're walking. When you're walking on foot.
Yes.
Quite a difference.
Good that you survived.
Oh, lucky me, no doubt.
Well, let's move on to another book. Before we got on air, you mentioned something about CIA books.
Oh, Vince Flynn is the author. And I do believe that Vince Flynn has passed away now. But he was one of my favorite authors. Vince Flynn has, maybe 9 or 12 different books. And it's, I look at it like, I liken it to an American James Bond. The main character in the Vince Flynn books, his name is Mitch Rapp, and thoroughly entertaining, completely fake, not a, you know, nonfiction book, but brilliant because it was modern. So all the way through the mid-2000s till modern day, 2015, I should say, not modern day, but 2015, were very relevant. So, and the way he wrote the fictional character was around close to like what was happening in the world then a little bit. So, I mean, there's relevance there. And I just really enjoyed those books. I really enjoyed following Mitch Rapp, the main character, through his career. And the books kind of span from when he was first recruited into the CIA and to where he really got good and really had, you know, did some really good work for America.
So the character developed throughout the series.
Exactly, to the point where he's now just, you know, maybe probably just a little bit older than I am and starting to think about retiring. And all of the characters that surrounded him throughout his whole life, too. So it's brilliant books.
It is nice to see a series where the characters change and develop rather than stay the same each episode.
Right.
So I'm just going to remind the audience that I'm here with Lance Ewers. We're talking books, nonfiction and fiction books, and we just have a few more minutes here. You mentioned that you force your children to read certain books.
I do.
Can you name some of the books that you've either read to them or forced them to read over the years?
You know, The Message to Garcia, that is an absolute must-read book. They actually have to read that book, and if they can't tell me about the story or the moral of the story, they have to reread it until they are. So my children have read that. Not all of them yet. I have one that's in first grade that she's not ready just yet to read it, but the others have. And you know, The Warrior Ethos from Stephen Pressfield is a lovely book that's not really it's more about, well, and I guess I don't know really how to describe this. But it looks at like character traits of leaders and great men who have, you know, led other men in times of, you know, war and just times of, you know, adversarial times. And, you know, so it's an interesting book. It's
and
got
who
a lot
is
of
that
great,
by?
His name is Stephen Pressfield. It's called The Warrior's Ethos.
And we don't have much time left. Maybe you can repeat some titles and authors of the books that we've talked about in case any of our audience members are interested in reading them also. We have about 20 seconds left.
Okay, great. I would you know, just in order really quick, Message to Garcia. What a great book. Total character building book. Albert Hubbard is the author to A Message to Garcia.
And who wrote this book, Boyd?
Boyd. Actually, Robert Corum. Robert Corum is the author of Boyd. That's a fascinating true story of a man who was, was America blessed
and
to have him.
I'm going
to
jump in here and say, consider Game of Thrones as if you haven't read it. This has been The Library Show. Thank you for listening.